Welcome, 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 Wahoo fans, to this week's edition of The Lockdown featuring T-Cub and the Ball Hawk. That's right. Petty Hawk is always, he just exists. He comes from afar. He leaps tall buildings in a single bound. It's just Petty Hawk.
Hey, man. He's trying to do what he do, man.
Look, Wahoo fans, we have a special guest this week. Former Cavalier great running back Wally Lundy has blessed us. What's good, family?
What's
how
going
you
on,
been?
Man? Good, good, man. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Oh, man. Thank you for blessing us, fam. And we just happy to have you on. Appreciate you taking the time. We really want to let the Wahoo fans get to know the man, the myth, the legend behind the 3-3.
Yeah, whatever I can add, whatever y'all can get out of me, man, I'm going to tell.
No doubt, no doubt. Well, fam, I want to jump in, man, because, you know, when we talk about sometimes we have to look to our past to remember and teach us where to go for the future. And I know you were a young man that, you know, had a lot of adversity in your younger life. You lost both your parents at a very young age. Would really like to hear a little bit about that, man, how it impacted you and how it drove you to become the man that you are today.
I mean, that's good. Let's get getting started right. So I guess the biggest thing is like the losing your parents at an early age. The biggest thing for me was having somebody to be able to stand in the gap. Like my grandmother and my mom's side of the family, her sister stood in the gap for us. Like they were really, we were four boys. We could have gotten to a lot of different things. There was a lot of stuff going on. Like to give you some background, like my dad was a gangster. Like if you want to, you know, he was a gangster. If you go ask anybody who he was, that's who he was. Like he was a stick up kid, you know? So that was in our blood, you know? And my mom, you know, Ali, she was a college girl. She graduated from Rutgers. And it's like, you know, that's the story of the good girl likes the bad guy, you know, or the bad boy. And, good thing that stand gap, my grandma and, my mom's sisters, they really stood in the gap to help us get through those times when our parents passed away. I think with them dying so early, it just made me realize that life is short and that you know, every opportunity that you get could be your last. And I think we live like that. You know, my oldest brother, Shaheed, who passed away when I was in college, my senior year, he was like a father to us. You know, it was weird because nobody ever taught us to, there was no older male in our family that taught us to want to play sports. He was the guy, you know, he was 5 years older than me. He would be like, yo, we're going to the courts, get the balls. Or we'd go get in the car. He'd drive us to the courts. And we'd be dribbling the basketball, or catching the football. Or we used to call him in the backyard doing Desmond Howard's because he used to die. I used to die for the ball back in college. And, so we'd call it doing the Desmonds. But, you know, he was a big piece. It was just people in my life that stood in the gap that helped me become the person I was. You know, I can't just say it was one thing or one thought that kept me through it. It was like a lot of different people, my coaches, you know, I had a bunch of really good coaches who made me better, who made me work hard, you know, and I wanted to work hard. I wanted to be good. I think that's the drive that I had from, you know, my family. But, you know, just had a lot of really good people. I think that's the only way you can really achieve anything in life, you know, is to have good people around you that help you, you know, see the value in what hard work can do, you know.
Yeah.
And you can see the value in, like, you know, because nothing is ever right now. You know, I can remember being a kid and playing basketball, and my grandpa was always so negative, but you know, he pushed me because he was always like, man, you know how many boys out there trying to play basketball? You ain't gonna make no basketball, playing football. You ain't gonna make it to the NFL. You know, and every time he would say that, I would go outside and I would work on my game. Like, I'm like, no way. I haven't met a 12-year-old. I just remember this as a 12-year-old. I haven't met a 12-year-old that was as good as me. Like, I haven't met him yet. Like, I'm trying to find him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eventually you find him because it was LeBron James and all those other guys. But at that age, I couldn't, you know, they weren't, you know, you didn't know. But yeah, man, it was just a lot of good people. I had a lot of good people in my life. my family being a big part of it, my brother being a brothers being a big part of it. But just, it just, you know, that was what helped me get through those trying times. You know, I also had a lot of stuff happen to me as far as just, you know, physically, like where I was in the hospital and I mean, I almost passed away. And when I was in eighth grade, I had a stomach intestinal blockage. And I know lost like 40 pounds, like over the month. And I was, you know, I was 1-2 weeks maybe of being up out of here because they was, you know, I was going to the hospital. They was sending me back home telling me I had a stomach virus. And it was really an intestinal blockage where I couldn't eat nothing. I just kept throwing up. And luckily, a woman that saved my life in virtual hospital in Mount Holly, she was like, let's do an x-ray. Let's do this. Like, let's not keep saying it's a virus. And they found it, and they like sent me to Philadelphia for like emergency surgery because you know I was only had a couple more, like maybe a week or two, you know, because I was bad. And then look at this. So then that was my eighth grade year, and then the next year I was starting varsity. So you know,
wow.
How old were you when your parents passed?
Well, my dad was I was 4, and my mom I was 8, going on 9. So, and it's a big thing. Like when we were young, you know, we never discussed how to die. And I'm going to say it on the podcast because I think it's important. You know, my mom and dad both passed away from HIV. And, you know, my dad was in the streets and he was doing, we think that's how he caught it. And, you know, passed it to my mom. I also, as a kid, when my mom was pregnant, they thought I was going to come out with it. You know, and she was on all the pre stuff she could do beforehand. You know, I don't really know the terminology, but you know, so that's, you know, that's how they passed away. And that, you know, I just think awareness, you know, it's not as bad as it was before, but you know, just to, you know, it can't happen, you know, so just always in my life, I always protected myself and always made sure I did the, you know, I know how it goes down, but I always made sure I did the right thing as far as when it comes to safe, being safe and doing anything as far as protection. But definitely on that side, as far as the HIV is concerned, because of what happened to my parents.
Right. Wow. Dude, that's powerful, man. You are what I call the consummate underdog. You know, I'm an immediate fan because I live in that underdog space. That is who I am. That is the brand that I am. And it is because of the adversities that I've had to overcome. Dude, we all underdogs simply because we have all had to overcome something in our lives to get us where we are, you know, and some people fold to adversity. Underdogs continue to fight and rise and scrap, you know, when it don't look like they have a chance to win. You know, it looks like the odds are insurmountable, you know, but somehow we find a way to scratch, to claw, to win, to chase greatness. And so kudos to you, my brother, for able to endure that.
For sure. And while you're saying that, it just popped into my mind to give my grandma Etta Davis a whole lot of respect and a whole lot of, you know, just give her a shout out because she is that, you know, she embodied that. She grew up with nothing, you know, her dad had to work on the train. She was a Native American and her dad had to work on the train and he'd be gone for weeks and she'd tell us stories about her having to ask the neighbors for food because they didn't have, you know, are going to have to work the fields, you know, and they're just struggling throughout, you know, and not really ever having much. And she still lived like that. She still lived like, I think it's just the mentality because she has stuff now, but it's just that mentality of like, I don't know, you know, I gotta keep everything, you know. So she and she a grinder and she still work. She 90 years old and she be out and she be grinding. And she don't take a penny from nobody. She gonna do her job. She still. And I'm like, Grandma, how Bisman, we call her Bisman. I'm like, Bisman, how long are you gonna live? I don't know. I still want to see some things. She tell me. So that Etta Davis, man, she the rock of the family. She's the matriarch.
Love it. Love it, fam. Love it. You know, those are the stories, man, that we have to tell our children. And the ones, you know, and we hope that those are the stories that they will continue to pass along because it's important, man, you know, and in this world, no one gives you anything, You know, you have to work for it. You know, if you want to be great, you got to work to be great. And, you know, it's not about how the story begins. It's about how it ends. And it's about the journey. You know what I'm saying? It's about the process. And so being able to share that, man, with your kids, it, you know, they look up to you. They look at you different, you know, and they're like, dang, he really came through some things. And while they may not be able to fully grasp it until they get a little bit older, I think it's still important because they have to remember where they came from. You know, I know my girls, you know, living in the suburbs, you know, they see life different. You want to have a better life for them, yeah. You know, so they're in better schools. But you know, a lot of time that means they're around a bunch of white kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, they're one of one. Both of my girls play the sport yeah. where they're one of one. But they have to remember where they came from, yeah. you know, at all times.
100%. I agree with you because when I was just, like I said, before we got on the show, started talking, we just bought a house. And the whole time I'm buying a house, my realtor, I keep saying that, man, my kid gonna grow up privileged. Like, I ain't grow up like this. He growing up, he got his own room. Like, he got basement, like all this stuff. And I didn't grow up with him. I'm like, man, it's this guy. It's this guy right here as we talk. Say hi.
What's up, big man?
That's what's up, man. Salute, right. Young King.
So you gotta go upstairs with that gold mines.
Right on cue,
man.
Right on time.
But yeah, so I just be like, man, I want to fight that. He can't grow up with privilege because I know, you know, what hardness can make out of you. You know, it can mm-hmm. make you strong. I don't want to be a pushover, but also, you know, I see people harden to the point where there was no coming back from it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, right.
So it's a happy medium because I turned out okay from my situation. But you know, I got brothers and cousins and friends that, you know, not here.
Yeah.
You know
what I'm saying? So, well, I think you hit it on the head. It's the balance. We want them to have a better life than we had growing up. But the balance that we need to provide them is to make sure that they understand that, look, this is not promised to you. You know, your mother and I have earned this. You have not. You know, the money that we have is our money. You know, you have to get to that point. You know what I'm saying? So make sure that the things that happen, A, God has allowed us to provide, but understand that it's earned, not given, for sure. You know, and you keep that balance. You keep that balance. So, look, let's take it back, man. Let's take it back to the early years. Let's take it back to Holy Cross High School. Mm-hmm. because that's what we do. We go way back. We go take it back to Holy Cross High School and talk about that time you breaking records for rushing and touchdowns and all of those things. And you transferred schools. You went mm-hmm. from Florence Township to Holy Cross. What was behind that?
So my first 2 years, I played with my brothers. Like we all was on the team. We were number 1 through 4. My brother ain't coming. 1, 2, 3, 4. My freshman and sophomore. Year. And then, you know, they were good. And they all went deep Division I. One of my brothers went to UConn when they were just coming into the Big East. And then one of my brothers went to Kent. And my cousin went to Kent with them. But I just felt like, you know, we were better. You know, I'm like, man, we were the talk of the town. And we were getting all these newspaper articles and like, but we weren't breaking into like the big time. Like it was only the small schools. And I'm like, yo, I gotta go. Cause I'm like, everybody at Holy Cross was a powerhouse of where I was from. Everybody from there was going to West Virginia and it was going to all these big time schools. I'm like, I know these dudes, like I'm going, like, I'm gonna go and test it. And the funny thing is when I left, I just happened to be moving at the same time. So I can say it now since it's past the time. I just so happened to be moving. I was going to move into Florence, but we had the spring ball we had camp that August and we didn't look good. So I'm like, yo. And one of my cousins was telling me to get out of here with a Holy Cross. So we had that one scrimmage at Florence my junior year. And I was like, yo, we're not going to be good. I'm trying to go big time and play big time football. I transferred in like the weekend to Kent to go to Holy Cross, and then Florence they took me to court. They took me to court for one to transfer for athletic advantage. They're trying to make me sit for the whole year. So like the whole time the papers was like, it was in the papers, Lundy transferring. He gonna be a big, he gonna be a big fish in a big pond. Like he's not gonna be able to play over there. All this, it's just a whole bunch of controversy going into me going on the Holy Cross. So I got the Holy Cross. Once I got there, I couldn't play the first game because we were still going through the court case. And then like the verdict came down that Wednesday that I could play. So they let me go and practice that Wednesday. First three cags were first cag, 75 yards. The first three times I touched the ball was the touchdown. We played against St. Joe's Prep. They was like the number 13 team on the East Coast. So I had no clue, nothing about how good these teams were. I'm like, yo, I'm just mad because they was trying to make me not play. So I'm like, yo, all right, I've been listening to Benny Siegel the whole time. That's, that's when The Truth was had just came out. And I was, you know, I was on that Benny, you know what I'm saying? So it was just, it was a perfect storm, man. Like, and then I just off to the races, man. After that game, that was my first game on Holy Cross. And then, I mean, I just took off. Like, every game since then, I had 100 yards receiving, 100 yards rushing. Like, my first junior year, I think I had 1,000 or something close to it. I was, like, my junior year, I was ranked in the country as a receiver. I wasn't even a runner. Like, I was number, I think I was, like, top 10 receiver in the country going into my senior year. And then a running back who they had the year before prior, who was the best player on the team before I got there. And then he ended up leaving. So he moved me back to running back. And that's when I like, so my whole high school career, the funny thing, I was a receiver. Ninth, because my brothers played running back. So I was receiver 9th, 10th, and 11th grade. And then my senior year, I switched to running back.
Wow. Hey, let me ask you a question. How long did it take for you to get your weight back and your strength back from when they found out about that illness? Because you said it happened 8th grade. How long did it take for you to really function at a high level again?
I remember, so I kind of started coming around in the spring. Like, I got out of the hospital in the spring. And, like, soon as I got out, like, soon as I could eat again, mm-hmm. I felt like I was back. Like, I would, because it wasn't like a, like, as soon as I could start eating again, maybe like a week or two after I could really start eating and getting my energy back. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I wasn't a big lifter back then. So mm-hmm. it was more about just going out and running, you know, being around your friends, running, playing, jumping. And I think, I mean, I had to be back by then. Had to be back by June, because I remember in June, the high school head coach, Coach Rapoli, I was in the bathroom. He had walked in and I was walking out and he was like, Lundy, you know, we're moving you up to varsity next year. He told me that in eighth grade before I even stepped on the field. Because, I mean, I was killing him in Pop Warner before I got sued. Yeah, so, I mean, probably around that summer that I just remember I was eating like two of everything. Like, like, I lost, so I was everything I was eating.
Man. I mean, that's phenomenal, man. Like, you know, they found out what you know, what was really going on with you. You get that fixed. You're 40 pounds lighter. And you on varsity and you cooking just like that.
Mm-hmm. First, I tell people this. My first touches through my 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade year, I scored a touchdown.
Wow.
9th grade, I caught the pass with my cousin. It was the first time I ever touched the ball, touchdown. I can remember. Sophomore year, I took a draw, 80 yards, touchdown. Then my Holy Cross year, that's when I told you I caught the ball 75 yards, touchdown. And then senior year, same thing as Carmen Dockett, only 80 yards. I'm gonna say what I gotta say
because it'll give away what we'll talk about later. But you're gonna notice a trend with Wally Lundy, what he just said. You're gonna notice a trend.
Word. So hold up. So I wanna talk about this hoop game you had too though. I mean, 1,000-point score.
I was pretty good.
So you was a hooper or you could play basketball?
Nah, I was a hooper. Like my first love was basketball. Like I was on the AAU team with J.R. Smith and Jay Williams and Tyquan Dean, if y'all know the name. We played against Tyson Chandler, man. You know, J.R. Smith used to come to my crib when I was in Houston. I mean, they know, like I used to hoop. my sophomore year before JR like took off, I was coming in the game before him. And I always tell people that. Like, I was coming in the game before JR. Because the crazy thing when I was at UVA was like my sophomore, junior year, and I saw his name pop up on the draft. I'm like, nah, that can't be him. That can't be the same JR. I looked at him, I was like, that's JR Smith. I called my coach. I'm like, yo, I called my AU coach. I'm like, yo, how'd he get to the league? I should have kept playing. I was a hooper, bro. I had a few offers coming out, but you know, I was just way better at football, so it wasn't even close. Mm.
Gotcha. So Wally, we always ask that question because it's a lot of perpetrators out here in this world. You know, basketball players, swear up and down, they got game. But speaking of game, you like the game, the rapper. You name dropped a lot of legit guys that I can't even, you know, troll you and be petty hawk because J.R. Smith was cold-blooded.
Yeah, he was good. I remember the story from when I met his family. We was playing it down in the Bob Gibbons tournament down in, I think, in North Carolina. I think they have it down there. Mm-hmm. So we was down there, like, I mean, I was around so many players, like Amar'e Stoudemire. We was all in like staying in the same hotel, you know what I'm saying? Like, so you got to meet all these dudes. Like, it's just cool because I'm seeing it now, but at the time, you don't know that D Brown is about to go to be this nice like that, you know, like, because we all in high school. But I remember I was playing in the Bob Gibbons tournament, and J.R. Smith's sister was like, oh, I need you to make 3 threes this game. I remember, like, it was clear as day because I was like, all right. And I went out there and made 3 threes. It's like, see, I told you he was going to make 3 threes.
Okay.
I just remember that because J.R. Smith was – I don't know why I remember that and why it's so vivid, but I just know that was, like, a memory I have of him and his family.
That's okay. Good stuff. Yeah. That's good stuff. So you ripped it up at running back your senior year. When it came down to recruiting, the couple teams, Virginia, Boston College, Carolina, and Rutgers, those were predominantly the schools. Did you visit them all?
Visit all. I visited Georgia, too.
Okay, in Georgia. Okay. And what was the determining factor that made you pick UVA?
So I always say it was two things. Coach Groh was coming from, I have familiarity with him because I'm from New Jersey. He was with the Jets. Mm-hmm. So when he came to the school, all the kids was going crazy because they didn't know him. So I thought that was kind of cool. And then he basically was like, Wally, you know what? You know I used to coach in the NFL, and I'm still going to coach NFL players. I'm just going to do it before they get there. Mm. And I was like, huh, that's me. He talking about me. So I'm like, all right. He had me with that one. He grabbed me with that one. And then that came down to Boston College and Virginia. And the biggest thing, I mean, they both had a lot to offer, but what it really came down to was that the ACC played on grass. Mm-hmm. ACC played on grass. I'm like, I don't want to play on turf. That's you know? Because they all both had a lot of good things. I really liked the players and it was all close-knit. They both had a lot of the same qualities that I wanted in school. That's why it was my last two choices, but the grass is what took Virginia over the top. I'm like, yo, I don't want to play on turf. I want to deal with turf burns my whole career.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you better be glad you went when you went, because I played on that hard-ass turf that Virginia had. I still got damn marks on my arms, man. It was straight pavement, green painted pavement.
Y'all know why I made the choice.
No doubt. So when you first got there, you know, we asked guys, man, did you feel like you were ready to roll when you got there? Or you feel like, you know what, I might need a little slow roast a little bit and take a red shirt. Did you feel like you were ready?
I didn't know. I'm not going to say to sit here and say I knew that I was ready. What I thought I could do is, and I told everybody I was going to go in and play. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't know, but what my mindset was is that if there's a hole, I'm going to run through it. Like I didn't make it harder than what it was. You know what I'm saying?
Facts.
I'm just going to play. You know, I'm not going to be like, oh, this is the top player or this top class or who I'm playing against. I can't think about that. You know, because if you start thinking about that, then you start second guessing yourself.
True.
So I just go out there and play. Like, you know, I just went out there and camped. And just, I mean, I worked, you know, like, and every time I got the ball, I wasn't scared, you know, like, I wasn't scared. I just kept it simple. It's football. Right. If it's a hole, I'm going to run through it.
Right. Well, and then you played your first year. So, I mean, you were a bigger back too.
Yeah.
You know, do you think that helped you? I mean, being, you know, 6 feet, 210, 215, you feel like that helped you? Your body, it sounds like your body was ready.
Yeah. I could take the pound a little bit more. I mean, it's still a strength factor in that because that first game of Colorado State, I remember they gave me 20 carries. Mm. And boy, I never felt like that after a football game. Really? I'm talking about, I felt sick, bro. Like, I felt like I was about to throw up. Like, I was in the Cavalier Inn. I was a Cavalier Inn. I curled up in the ball, bro. I was like, oh, my God. I like, this is what college football like? I guess I never put that much energy out before.
Yeah.
It just took it all from me.
20 carries out the gate?
Out the gate.
Yeah, that's no joke. And that was a tough game too. 57,000 in the buildings.
And it was like I can remember being muggy. And then I think Alvin got hurt in camp. So it wasn't like, I don't even know about it. It was all just happened, like, because Alvin got hurt because it was Marcus and Alvin were ahead of him.
Yeah.
And then Alvin got hurt in camp, so he was kind of iffy coming back that first game. And then they put Marcus in the first series, and then they put me in like on a third down, and I got a first down, like one of my first carries. I got like a 7 yard carry, something like that. And then they was like, all right, I guess they thought it was hot. So he let me roll.
Let you cook from there. You know, the thing about you, man, is that you were a big back, but you were fast. You were shifty.
Yeah.
I
would say more shifty than fast because people, you know, they hated on my speed, but.
It's because you pigeon toed, man.
Yeah. Exactly. You're right.
That's why.
It is.
Yeah. You know, but it's interesting, man. You know, it's just like when you watch you play, you were very elusive.
Yeah.
You had great vision and it looked like you were moving. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But then you could drop that forearm and shoulder on somebody and make them feel it too. You know, and then you had great hands out of the backfield too, you know, coming from being a receiver.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, that dynamic, most people I'm sure had no idea that you were a receiver. Your freshman through your junior year before moving to running back and smashing it at running back. So, you know, man, you know, Virginia got the bonus, the all purpose player.
Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know when I got to Virginia, I knew they was recruiting me at running back, but I mean, it was whispers that they didn't know where they wanted, you know? Mm-hmm. So I didn't know. I think when I got there, they didn't know. But I had got too big, like, because before I was like 195 when I went on my visit, 195, 205, mm-hmm. like 205 my senior year. So, but then when I got on campus, I was like 212 because I had been working. So the thing about before I got to Virginia that year, I had been working out with Urban Fry, who's his son went to my high school. So he just, you know, he had us on that, man. Like, we was getting big, you know, he just had me working. And then I was 212 and I got to school. And then Grow was like, they were like, oh, we don't want you to get too big too fast, you know? So I kind of had to like watch my weight that freshman year. Because I think about it, what might have came in a little smaller, they might have played me on the seat. Because we brought in, it was all these backs that came in that year. Tony Franklin, who was a top 20 back. Michael Johnson, who was the number one, one of the backs in the country.
Yep.
Kenneth Times, Lonzo Times, I don't know if y'all know that name, but he was there. So, and then me, and then Jason Snelling.
And Jason,
So that's five running backs that they brought in. And all those guys were ranked, they were all ranked like top 50. I mean, I think Jason Snell might have been top 100, but whatever. Jason Snell played in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just feel like they may have had a plan, like bring everybody in, we'll figure it out when they get.
Yeah,
you know, I think I came in too big. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, because Mike Johnson was like a 10-3, 100 guy, you know.
Yeah, right here. You know, he was the guy coming out that you was like, everybody, you sure you want to go there? Mike Johnson going there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, we want more talent. But true. I'm like, you know, if he's that good and he's that much better than me, then he's going to play. Like, I'll be fine. I can live with it if I know I'm going out there and giving my all and he's just better than me. That's what it is.
That type of mentality is not appreciated enough because you see a lot of guys ducking smoke. So that what you just said, that jewel you just dropped, I hope everybody rewind that and listen to what he just said. If you are somebody being recruited, it don't matter who going there. It's a competition anyway. Mm-hmm. Compete.
Yeah, but it's different times now, man. You know, kids want, you know, they want something given to them. You know, that old school mentality of working your ass off for something, you know, if a guy beats you out, be like, all right, well, look, I'm going to continue to work on my craft every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm going to force them to have to play me. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And it's not like that. A guy beat a kid out now, he in the transfer court. You know, like, boom, he go. Yeah. Like, damn, homie.
This is different now, too, man. They don't get the – older guys don't get to really press the young kids early.
No.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they don't get to press them.
There you go.
They get to get away with a lot of things.
Yeah.
Some of them older guys, they ain't play that. Crowell wasn't, you know, stories of Warmack and, you know.
Warmack.
And, you know, these guys, Ray Man, like, we used to be, as freshmen, we used to be scared of these guys. You put people in the headlocks, you know what I'm saying? So, but now, like, everything is, you know, so touching. You can't do nothing.
Right.
The chain of command ain't there, man. Like, yeah, you might be a talented guy. You might come in with NIL potential or things like that. But you a baby when you – it's like you a rook. I don't care what your potential is, what your hype is. You fall in line, Jack. And the coach is going to back me with the captains. Fall in line. Earn your stripes. You know what I'm saying? Them stars is gone.
Yeah, buddy.
Once you step on campus, ain't no what you a 5-star. You a 0-star now.
Zero. Don't mean nothing. Yeah. You get to that point, don't mean nothing, man.
Yeah, It's about that work, fam, for sure. Well, man, you had a wonderful career, man. You know, you went to 4 bowl games during your stint. You won 3 of them. You know, but when you left the university, you were the leading touchdown rusher in the ACC, 52 touchdowns at that moment.
Oh, yeah. I missed the majority of my senior year, so I could have, I really get tight about that because I could have pushed that up a little bit more. But it is what it is. I'm happy where I stand. Man. It's good.
Yes. That's all he do is score touchdowns, man. You heard that from high school. He touched the ball, he scored. And one thing about Wally, I said, like, yo, who is this dude? Every time he get the ball, it's like he's scoring. Mm-hmm. All he do is score a touchdown.
You know what? And I can say it was all me, but I got to thank Heath Miller for getting tackled on the 1-yard line.
Facts.
Facts. Nah, but Heath is a beast. I mean, and you know what? A lot of those was, you know, those goal line runs or those in red zone runs where it's harder to score. But we had some dogs up front.
Yes, you did.
Man, we had some dogs up front who they moved. Like, I mean, you could have scored in. I mean, all our backs got off.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't just me. I was the goal line guy because I did it in practice. Like, we had goal line peers. I always scored in goal line, so they made me the goal line back.
Right.
But, like, I'm sure any of the backs that we had, because everybody was good, could have done it, you know? I'm just the guy that they chose.
Nah, dog, you was good enough that you
I was good. I was good. I'm not saying I'm not.
That's fine.
Time,
I'll say it for you. You gotta say it. They can't look. Hey, we don't lie to our friends. You was the guy for the job. Anybody couldn't have did it like you did it. You are one of one. You did it, bro. Am I lying, Cub? Because Cub won't let you get away with that either.
No. You know, and because, you know, so it's just like, you wasn't just a damn goal line rusher. Let's be clear.
Nah.
3,100 yards, almost 3,200 yards rushing. 44, almost 4,500 all-purpose yards. Mm. So you wasn't just scoring inside the 10.
Come on.
Come on now. We're going to give you your flowers. Yeah,
this is a podcast for your flowers.
I appreciate it.
That's why I love humble guys. I'm going to talk spicy for you because this is what this platform is about, man, celebrating individuals like yourself that – not going to toot their own horn, but we got 2 bull horns, and it's loud with a lot of amps, and it's well deserved, bro. Like,
you know, I always had trouble with the accolades.
That's a beautiful thing, bro.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's beautiful, man. That's beautiful. You're not wrong. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. What we're saying is, for individuals, so for players like you, this is why I can speak myself. I get excited because I know you aren't really going to pump yourself up. You know what I'm saying? So I take it upon myself to use my loud mouth and be like, yo, this is what it is. So when Cole reading these stats off, I'm like, shh, do y'all understand how special that is? Because he not going to tell you. Because he respected, you know what I'm saying? You respect your brothers around you. But I'm going to be one of your brothers and amplify that. Wally Lundy was special. That's why when you talked about high school, as soon as I touched the ball, I went 75s. Then the next year I did this. I'm like, they going to notice a trend. He stayed in the paint.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you did, bro.
Ten toes down in the paint.
Because when I left the county of South Jersey, I think I had broke a couple of records, touchdown records in the county before I left. But it, I think Isaac Redman ended up breaking it like a couple years later. But yeah, I did. I always had a nose for the end zone, man. That guy,
bro. Yeah, man. Like real talk, like. As Cub, and we'll keep talking about this, as Cub was alluding to, though, like, you were a rarity, man, because, like, at your size, your weight, I joked about you being pigeon-toed, but it's the truth. When people are usually pigeon-toed, they feel like they ain't running fast because the strides look different. But nobody was running up on you. You could make people miss. You had those great sudden – you instinctually, you were special because it could be a guy right there, and a lot of guys wouldn't know they were there, but you knew they were there. You might pop them with an arm before they was even ready because you knew it were there. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of touchdowns you score, you know how to get skinny. So goal line's not about just being strong, bro. You knew how to get skinny. You know that drill when it's two dudes, you got to turn your shoulder. Man. But you was a rare guy that could turn and still stay up to where you won't dive in the end zone. You was running through it.
Yeah.
You know what I remember the play from the Confident Retire Bowl. I think we was at the 10 and I went down low.
Yep.
Low man went. I went down low. I met him at the 5. We drove him all the way in from the 5. I guess like you're saying, you just got a knack for it. You know that. I know if I'm getting low, you're going to have to get as low as me or you ain't going to beat me,
And you bring it 214, which
is. Yeah, I'm bringing it with it.
Yeah. You know,
Pac-Man Jones, he gained a, he still messaged me to this day. He gained a lot of respect for me after that game.
Oh yeah! Salute the Pac-Man.
Yeah, but it's just a rare blend though, man. Because you can also catch a damn screen or flare pass and give it to him in open field with the limp leg. You know, juke, spin on the guy, keep balance, and then down the sideline. So you know, it just like I said, man. As I'm watching tape, yeah, I'm like, okay, this dude was real. Real special and real rare. So yeah, bro, it exceptional.
Thank you.
Exceptional.
I appreciate that. For sure.
So then when we look at the NFL and you know your career there, you were drafted by the Texans, I believe, in a 6th round. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about what that experience was like.
I mean, it's just a rare, to get drafted anywhere, in any league is a blessing. It's you're amongst it. So like winning a lot, So just to have my family be able to experience it, my wife was my girl in, but our family be able to experience it, be able to see my name come across, recorded, be able to have my son see a bunch of that stuff. So I think it's a culmination of the work you put in college. Mm-hmm. It lets you know that you did do some really good things where people are, ready to spend some money on.
Right.
It's just a really good feeling. Now, I took it as like this, though. Like, I'm like, I celebrated it, but I also wanted to be like, all right, you're not done. You got to go in and earn it. You got to go in and make the team. Mm-hmm. You got to go in so that was my mindset. I was like, all right, I'm good. I'm here. I'm happy. But I got to go in and play. That's what it's going to have to be. Because I would, 6th round was good. That's why I said it first. Like, it's a blessing to be drafted anywhere. But my mindset was to be drafted in the first round. And I had, I got hurt my senior year.
Talk to us about that. Talk to us about the injury.
First game when we played Western Michigan, blitz pickup. I ducked my head down. My foot got caught in the turf, and I just popped my plantar fascia. So if anybody ever played in plantar fascia, it was like a bad case of plantar fascia where I couldn't plant. So I couldn't plant on my foot. So it just, you know, it hindered me for like a month, 2 months of the season. It was basically like the season, you know. The last four games I did pretty well, but, you know, it hindered me. And I stayed because I wanted to go first round because, I mean, everybody thought I was going to come out my junior year. Mm-hmm. Which I had the opportunity to because they were selling third round, but I'm like, yo, I want to go first round, you know. And Grow had this conversation with me before I actually decided to come back. He was talking to me about Cadillac Williams and what he did the prior year because he had the same opportunity and he made himself a first round draft pick. So, you know, that was my goal. I wanted to be a first round draft pick. That's why I didn't leave. So, you know, being the sixth round, I just felt like I needed to get in there and prove myself. So, you know, it was good. It was a blessing. I felt like I could have been higher.
Gotcha. And so, you know, going in that first year, you started your first game as a rookie. Dominic mm-hmm. Davis was injured. Mm-hmm. You know, coach mm-hmm. comes, taps you on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And, that, you know, it's yours. So talk to us about, you know, run that first game in the NFL and that first season.
It was surreal, man. It was so surreal because I grew up an Eagles fan. I grew up bringing it home for Jerome, you know, mm-hmm. Jerome Brown. I grew up with Randall Cunningham. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up with the Bad Days, Dat Merton, Bobby Horn, bro. I grew up an Eagles fan, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the first game we played was against the Eagles. And B. Dawg was out there. Jeremiah Trotter was out there. Donovan McNabb, Westbrook. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm cheering for these boys. Like, die hard, you know? So
out there versus Weapon X, boy.
Yeah, so to be staring in the face of these guys and playing against them was, and, you know, I say, like, you know, don't think about that. You know, just go out there and play. But it's hard not to think about that when you're out there with them, you know? Because now your idols become your rivals, and that's like, you know, that's the – so it was surreal, man. But it was also a good experience. Got a lot of good critiques from Trotter.
Yeah.
He because he went to my church.
Okay.
He's from South Jersey. So he went to my church. He knew my auntie. So he was just saying, like, yo, Wilder, you got it. He said, you just need a little more dog. Just get a little more dog in.
Hey,
you
know, I got a question to ask you, though. Did you hear Brian Dawkins? Did he scream out any hallelujahs during the game? Because that means he peeled somebody cap back. So
nah, but he did do his patent. Like, he tackled me. He tackled me. Uh-huh. And then he got up and he, like, you know, I stand over you and you looking like, he's not looking at you, you look past you.
Yeah.
So he tackled me and, like, stood over me. I was just looking like, damn, he doing that to me? I can't believe it. So
nothing, you know, like Weapon next, man. He's something else, bro.
Man, he looked different now. You know how Iverson said Michael Jordan was glowing out on uh-huh. the corner. Yeah, that's how I felt like B. Dawg looked when he was standing on. Like, yeah, I felt like I saw his aura. It was like, it is crazy.
That's wild, man. Yeah. That's wild. You know, I think as I think back, because people always ask, you know, who's the best running back, who you played against, who's the best quarterback, who's the best receiver. When I think about the guys and, you know, their Hall of Fame status, I was like, dang, you know, when I played against them, I didn't view them that way because I knew the guys. I knew them as, you know, we chopped it up in the off season, or like a Sterling Sharp to me was the best receiver I ever played against, you know, playing against him in college. You know, I mean, he scored against Virginia every way imaginable and got to be friends with him. Mm-hmm. And then I get, you know, he's at Green Bay, I'm at Tampa, mm-hmm. and we're, you know, we're in the same conference. I'm playing against him twice a year. And, you know, I'm covering him in the slot. And in between plays, we cutting up. But as soon as, you know, boom, it's line up. Yeah. It's just he is just in the zone. And he was such an athlete that possessed such a high football IQ with a blend of strength, speed, and fluidity. I mean, he was so smooth. It didn't look like he was running fast, but he was blazing, mm-hmm. you know. And
He was my favorite receiver.
Word. He was so smart. You know, I mean, I've seen times when I would be off of him in off coverage, and he points to the linebacker and be like, hey, you're lined up wrong.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I mean, bro, I mean, he knew the game, what everybody was supposed to be on that field. You know,
I was so hurt when he couldn't play no more.
Dude, it crushed me. It crushed me because I'm like, that dude right there, woo! What he did was able to do in 7 years was something special. You know, and then, you know, to play against a Barry Sanders, to play twice a season, to play against a Dan Marino.
I can't imagine seeing that in person.
Yeah, I mean, you know, man, so it's just like playing against these guys and being close friends with, you know, with Bruce Smith and Thurman Thomas and, you know, Biz Cornelius Bennett and Daryl Taylor, you know, hanging with those guys, like just at just cool dudes. But then when you get on the field, it's like, yo, these dudes are playing at such a high level. And it always amazed me, you know, people like, well, you didn't think Jerry Rice was the best? I was like, I mean, Jerry was good. Mm. But, you know, my boy used to get Jerry Rice fits. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, it's.
Sterling didn't get to go the full distance.
Though. I know.
Like, yeah, that's the only thing. He was, cut short.
I know, man.
It was special, though, man. Special.
Another guy that reminds me of, like, Dre. Like, the best – so it's two best players I – since you said the best players you ever saw. The two best players I ever saw in person, one was at Virginia, was Ahmad Brooks. He's the best – I mean, I never seen nothing like that in my life. If Ahmad Brooks wanted to be the greatest, if he had the work, you know, he had the workout regimen of LeBron James, if he just really wanted it, he would be the best linebacker that ever played the game. Mm-hmm. Ahmad was like, I'm gifted. I can do this and I can chill. I don't got to work that hard. But if he played 10 years, Ahmad did good for himself. But he was the best, probably the best player I ever, this defensive player that I ever played against. And I, you know, he was just like different, 6'4", 4'5". I mean, just different. And then Andre Johnson. I mean, Andre Johnson. Was
How was that, man, watching him work?
Oh, my God. We ended up being a running back room just rewinding film, just watching him float across the film. Like, it don't even look like he be running.
Yeah.
It don't even look like he runs.
A big boy, too.
He's so big, bro. It's so crazy how big he is. I'm like, he's like a tight end out there.
Yeah.
He's so big. And then when you get to know him, like, he don't talk that much.
Yeah.
Nah, he was like, Dre. And then you get on the field, I'm like, yo, where's this guy come from? Me and Chris Taylor used to always say that. He's like, yo, who is this guy? Like, he a totally different person on the field. But I mean, he just was the hardest worker, man. We would be running 100s. Like, we had to run one on the field. We go 100 yards, 90 yards, 80, you know what I'm saying? All that.
Okay.
And he would be in any drill that we ever did, he never came in. He always was first. Mm. He never came in second. I'm like, bro, like, what's wrong with you? Like, you got $100 million. Why are you here? When he was just, he was that dude. Like, I just feel bad for him because he was so loyal. He was so loyal to the Texans that a lot of people didn't get to see how good he was.
They didn't see how he could cook for real. Well, we saw it, but just imagine though.
Right. But those are probably the best players I ever been, like, skill talent wise. I'm like, dang, that's a different level.
Indeed. So after that first year, they released you. What happened after that?
So I got hurt that camp, my second camp. I tore some ligaments in my ankle the last preseason game. So it was such a funny situation because I kind of sprained my ankle in the beginning of camp. So I missed a few days of camp and then I came back because I knew it was kind of behind the eight ball because it was just a long story, but it was a different coordinator that came in. Troy Calhoun went to be the head coach of Air Force. Sherman came in, so he brought some of his guys in. So that's why I was behind the eight ball that my second year. Then I got hurt, and so I came back, and I was playing good. It was like, oh, you open up some eyes, whatever. So we go into the Tampa Bay game. It's me and Sam kind of got him. And they're like, all right, you got a chance. This is the last piece of the game. You got a chance to open up some eyes and still make the team. So I'm like, all right, so Sam kind of got to get the first series, the first couple of series. He has, I think, 2 carries or 7 yards. I go in there and have, I think, 5 carries and like 60 yards and a touchdown. And I had 2 tackles on special teams, you know. But I got cut the next day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was just really just they didn't want me to be there. You know, mm-hmm. t- Tom Sherman, he was an OC. He had his guys. I wasn't one of his guys. But the messed up thing about it was, it didn't matter if I got, didn't make that team. I was going to get picked up somewhere else. But I got hurt the last play I was in. I broke a draw for like 30 yards. And somebody, D lineman, tackled me. And under the pile, he turned my ankle. Mm-hmm. Turned it. And then, that's when I tore my ligaments in my ankle. But I didn't know that it was that. I thought that because I had a high ankle, I had a sprain early in camp. So I just thought it was a sprain. So I'm like, all right, it's just a sprain. I'll be all right. I'm going to get ICU treated. I signed all the papers to Dick because I'm like, yo, I'm all right. It's just a little sprain. I'm going to be all right. I'm going to tape it up. I'm going to be good. You know what I'm saying? So I signed the papers that I was healthy when I really wasn't 100%. And I didn't know that I had ligament damage. Mm. So the next 3 days later, I get a call from New England. They fly me out there. They just want to see me run. They didn't even put me, they made me, my mind, you know, like, you yeah. know, too. So it, when you go to a team, they want to see you to run a 40. They want to see you do all this mm-hmm. stuff. When I got there, they just wanted me to go. They just had me go through bags, and they wanted me to catch the ball with a quarterback. I wasn't going to do no drills. They're going to sign me as soon as I left. They just want to see if I was healthy. But that was the first time I tested out my ankle. So I got there, and I'm taking my ankle, and I'm starting to run around like, yo, this joint don't feel right. Like, it's not normal. It's not the same injury. It's not the same as what it was. Like, I can't run on it. So I went through the workout, and the running back coach was like, yo, you look hurt. And I was like, damn. I don't really remember what I said to him, but he was like, you got to get healthy. You get healthy, you know, reach back out to us, and that'd be that. But me being dumb, I told my agent, like, yo, I'm hurt my ankle. And he like, yo, you know, how bad it is? I was like, I'm not sure, but maybe he'd give me a week. So he gave me like a week or two. And then I started, like, all these teams was reaching out to us. Like, I mean, it was so many teams. So I went on like four trips where I'm like, I got to get picked up. I wanted to get picked up. So I went to Seattle. And then, no, first I didn't go to Seattle. First, Seattle is when I stopped. I went to Tampa Bay. I went to I went to three places. I forget the places that I went, but the last place I went was Seattle, and they did a X-ray on my ankle. Just, you know, somebody testing you out and do all this stuff. And they was like, "Yo, did you hurt your ankle recently? Like, your ankle looks like it's hurt." Like, I'm like, I was like, "Yeah," but he's like, "You need to go get this checked out." So after that, I was like, "Oh, all right, something must be really wrong with it." So I called my agent, like, "Yo, you got to stop setting up workouts because it's making me look bad." Because when you're in the league, they don't see that you had that you were hurt. And when you got more across the wire, you know, they see that you had a bad workout.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, what Lundy doing? Yep. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I after that I stopped and I went to UVA and I got healed up. And then the crazy thing is, I had another shot to get in the league. Probably my last shot to get in the league. I went to Carolina the preseason before that. I had been out of the league for a whole year after this. So I went to Carolina before preseason in July, and they took us to where they were at camp. I think if we had a good workout, we would have been signed on the team and wouldn't have been in camp. So I went there, and when I slept on the bed, when I woke up, my back was out. My back has never went out ever in my life. Like, wow. Never. My back never went out. The first time my back ever went out, I was in Carolina getting ready for a workout. And I mean, dumbly, I should have just been like, yo, something on my back, I can't do it. Me trying to be like the fighter that I am, like, yeah, I'm gonna fight through, I'm gonna do what I've been training for this. And I did the workout and it wasn't good, you know, and that was my like last real shot to get into the game, you know. And you know, that was that.
Mm.
So it was
what was next?
So I went to the CFL for a little bit. I just didn't have the same. It just wasn't the same. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, yo, it's just different up here. But like, I tried to make the team, but I don't know if my heart was really in it when I was really training to do it. So I didn't make the team. And Tressel actually was the head coach up there. And you know, whatever, we ain't talk, but. So after that, man, I was just like, I went back home and just had to ponder, like, you know, I had just lost my brother, and I didn't really get to deal with it because he burned stuff, you know. So I just had a house in Houston, like, I just left everything. Man, I went and went back home to New Jersey just to be around my family. You know what I'm saying? So because I was going through it, like I was lost the team, you know, there was a bunch of stuff that was going on, like, and so I just went back home so I could that people that got me through my life, you know, I went back to it and you know, just building myself up, trying to figure out what I'm going to do. So I started working odd jobs, like trying to, because the crazy thing is, and this is a big part of the story that should be told, is that I didn't get my degree when I left Virginia. So I couldn't automatically do what I wanted to, was to get right back into coaching, because I had to get back into school and finish school. So I did that when I started going back to school. So once I got into school, I was like, all right, I got to figure out how I can work and make money. So I just started working odd jobs, and I did plumbing for a couple of years. I worked with people with disabilities. I worked in the schools. You know, I did a bunch of stuff just to, while I was in school, to get my, finish my degree so I can go be a college coach. So I got my degree in like 2016. Well, and around then, I always did music. So if y'all know me, I know
I was going to get to that.
So I always made music. And so I was doing that on as well. You know, I got a group, Fresh Fusion. One of my guys is from that group, Jace Harley. He's actually doing really good. I mean, he makes money, lives, feeds his family off of his music. Like, he does well. But so I did that too. But my main thing was to get my degree so I can go be a coach. Because I just felt like I wanted to be able to, I always wanted to give back to the game.
You know? Yeah.
Because the game gave me so much, no matter what, at what level, you know, like, because I know at the same time I said I was doing all the other stuff, I was also coaching Pop Warner football. Because my nephew was in there. So I was coaching Pop Warner football, rec basketball. I was just trying to stay involved with the athletes and the kids and the community. You know, as I was working on finishing my degree. I finished my degree, then I got married kind of at the same time, and it was a spot open in New York at Pace University after I got my degree. So he hired me, Andy Rondo hired me, gave me my first job as a running back coach at Pace University. And then from there, I got the job at Lafayette with John Garrett, who was on staff at UVA when I was there. You know, we just recently got released, got let go in December. So now I'm just out here looking, you know, just trying to find my next thing. You know, I just dropped the album. I just dropped my album, This Is Me, last month, 425, I dropped it. So if y'all want to check that out, much love, I appreciate it. And I'm working, man. I got a lot more music coming out. So I'm really excited about that, because a lot of the time when I'm in coaching, you miss a lot of time with your family, but you also miss a lot of time with other things that you love to do. And I really love making music. And I'm just happy that I'm able to do that more now. I miss coaching, but I am happy I get to do other things.
Did you find yourself really pouring the pen to pad when you got released and transitioned back to Jersey? Was that a point to where you was putting a lot of material out, in your opinion?
So many songs from you. Like, I got songs that people would never hear, because a lot of the times I make songs for myself, you know, like, so I can just remind myself where I was at.
Right.
But yeah, I got a lot of songs, man. I remember I think one of the bars was like, lost on the surface, not knowing if there's a purpose, and knowing that no one's perfect is the shit that keep me sane. I started splurging, thinking everything's for certain, but the only thing for certain is that everything's gonna change up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he could go, man. He could go, Kyle.
How did you get into this music? I mean, where did that come from?
Man, it was a way to express myself. As a kid, I can remember this vividly. It was a little piano in my auntie's and her daughter's bedroom, and for the piano could record. I was like 10 years old, and I pressed record on it, and the beat was playing. You know, I did play the automatic beat, rapping on it. And I played it back, and I was like, "Oh, that's dope."
That's like a little Casio. That must have been the little Casio keyboard. Yeah.
So I did that, and I'm like, "Yo, that's dope." And then ever since then, I've just been writing. Like, always been writing. Always been able to. You know, it started out as a lot of it was poetry. I still write poetry. Mm-hmm.
Same.
Love do that.
But, you know, then it just ventured into rap. And then when I met my guy, once I got back to Jersey, my boy Jace Harley, he's a musical genius. You know, he's classically trained, played all type of instruments. He's a great artist. I'm plugging him right now. But once I met him, he kind of gave me an ear for how to make a song. Okay. You know, like how the song is to be composed. So that's what I've been doing, like, you know, just piecing it all together, you know, But really what got me into music was just, you know, going through a lot and being able to express it by writing it down.
Mm, that's dope. That's what I did for poetry was that release for me, man. You know, in my confident, arrogant way, you know, and I don't say arrogant in a bad way, but just that arrogance that you need as a high level athlete, you know, that deep belief in self. So we don't always get to express ourselves. You know, I lost my mom at age of 47. So my mom, my entire time in college, my mom was battling through breast cancer, you know? And so, you know, I'd written when I was in high school, I wrote a lot in college, you know, and I always said, hey, I'm going to write a book of poetry for my mom. But that was my release. So I feel you there. And it's good to have that place because a lot of guys don't, man, they deal with a lot of mental health issues because they don't have that release, you know? And I mean, I think about all the times where shit, I may have been depressed and didn't know it because I just kept grinding. You know, I wasn't in a good head space, but I just kept grinding because that's all I knew. Yeah, you know what I mean?
You made me just think about a bar that somebody just said, it was basically like, maybe it wasn't a bar. It probably was an interview where he was just saying, like, yo, I can't get caught up in how I feel. I got to keep working because feelings that have me lost. Because if you start to fall into those feelings, that's what you're going to bring around.
Yep. Yeah, facts.
Absolutely.
Facts. Fact. Have you listened to Kendrick's latest joint? Oh, my God.
Of course. Kendrick's a master. And I said this on on one of my snaps, but like Kendrick, I put out an album and it sounds like nothing that nobody else is doing at the time.
Yep.
Agreed.
He put out his own music. Like, it don't matter what y'all do. Like, I'm going to put out what I put out. Like, not trying to be trendy. You
know? No.
Nope.
And, you know, this album was... There's so many issues that he dealt with and expressed in this album, you know, black trauma, you know, male masculinity.
He touched on stuff that people so scared to rap
about.
Everybody don't even know how to approach it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And he hitting that thing so tough, man. I was just like, man, listen, I've listened to it so many times already. Cause it's just that joint that I could just push play, and it just takes me every time I listen to it. It just takes me away, and I hear something new, and I'm like, "Ooh,
bro, give me goosebumps!"
I'm telling you. Oh man, I hope you find that peace of mind in this life. What? Oh my man, it's hot. It's hot. So hey, tell the fans how to find your music, fam.
Yeah, facts.
So you want to find my music? So my middle name is Salter. So my music name I go by is Wally Salter. So that's Wally's regular spell, WALI_SULTAN, Wally Salter. That's what my music is on all streaming platforms. So Spotify, Tidal, YouTube Music, YouTube, if you're on YouTube. So I'm everywhere. So.
Oh, I'm looking for you now. Hold on. I need to double. Let me make sure I got this written down right. WALI_
So, yep, it pops up on it's on iTunes too.
What is the S A what?
SULTAN.
Okay. Bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. We need folks to find that for sure.
Facts.
For sure.
Now, a lot of that music is you know, before I got into coaching, I kinda stepped back from the music and I was about to put out the album. I had released it, but I let it go. I didn't put it back up. So I just, a lot of that music is some music that like a couple of songs that I made recently, but it's songs that are older songs, but I just wanted to release it so I could feel like I'm in the game, you know?
Right.
I've been making music now. I'm making a lot of music, so.
Okay, that point of completion, Hey, Hawk, we need to get him and Drizzo Beats together, yo.
Yeah, we need to get him and Drew, because Drew make the beats.
Andrew Brown, we need to get you and Andrew Brown together.
I'm down. I'm like, you know who I mess with? Philip Brown. Phillip Brown said something.
Phil Brown played at the U2.
Yeah.
Ironically, man. Drew, no, he ain't in Houston no more. He actually in with the Chargers.
San Diego, with the Chargers,
Drizzle go crazy, man.
He nice, man. I like Drizzle. He nice, bro. We got that's definitely on the chart. The link, both of y'all love. I'm gonna hit him up this week and be like, "Yo, fam, we need to hook y'all two up. Yeah. Y'all create some damn magic.
Let's go." Let's
so it could be the intro to this.
Yeah, because we need an intro, fam.
I got you.
That's only right. It's only right, you know what I'm saying? Two dudes from the U.
Get him the he make beats and he rap too.
He make beats. He just make beats.
Yeah, tell him to send me the beat, whatever beat y'all like, I'll make it with.
That'll work.
That's what's up.
Work. Well, fam, before we let you get out of here, we always end our session with something called Shut the Hell Up, I'm Underdog. And what that is something that gets under your skin, that pisses you off, but you're like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to be all right. I'm going to overcome it anyway. It could be sports related or not. Holla at us.
I hate to be the guy. I mean, I do a lot of talking on my Wiley Salton page on Facebook under people's posts. And I just recently posted a post. Like, it was a post about the black coaches in the NBA. It was like, you know, 50% of the coaches in the NBA are black. And I just said, my post was, the NBA is so far ahead of the NFL, it's common. And what really gets under my skin is that I was just saying that, you know, they're giving these guys opportunities and interviews to actually get the job. And all the posts is about all this racism. Like, I'm the racist person because I'm saying that I'm happy that these guys are getting an opportunity. And I'm just saying, I just want to see everybody get an opportunity. Even if you don't get the job, like, give them an opportunity the qualified guys an opportunity to get the job. Mm-hmm. Under the post, you got all these people just posting like, well, it's only 13% of blacks in the country, so it only should be that in the league. Maybe the players should only be 13% of the players. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, y'all so hateful, you know? Mm-hmm. And that just get under my skin that, you know, people can't, we all in this together, you know what I'm saying? Like, at one point, we couldn't get a job. We couldn't play in the NBA. We couldn't play in the NFL.
Right.
There was nobody that was there. So, and that changed. And we all did that together. So it's not just us that's able. We can't do it ourselves as a black community to go be head coaches. The white people got to help. They got to stop for it too because they're the majority. So,
yeah.
I just don't. I don't like to see the hate because the racism because it's just like we all did it together. It's not just us. We didn't do this on our own. So that really gets under my skin.
Yeah, the thing is though, they're so afraid of not being the majority population because it's dwindling. They're about to be third because it's the Hispanic population, African American population, and the Caucasians. Mm-hmm. You know, so they so afraid that they're going to be they're afraid that we're going to treat them like they've treated us. Bottom line, if they're not the majority, and that's where all of this lies. They're so afraid that they're going to be treated. We're going to treat them like they've always treated us. And we just want equity. We don't want be thankful that we just want equality and equity and not revenge. That's not how we built. That's all we've ever asked for. It's equity. Inequality.
And be happy for somebody that's been struggled. And that probably parent didn't have the same opportunities that they been afforded, you know? Like, that's a big deal for them and those people's families because he probably the first person in their family that was able to do it, you know?
Facts. Well, fam, thank you for blessing us, brother. This has been awesome. We're going to make sure we shout out your music, man. Thanks. Continue to do great things. Continue to uplift the community, bro. You get it. We need you around UVA. Coach Elliott wants the alumni back in the mix. You know, he flat out told me, he was like, Tony, this is you guys' program. I'm sitting in the seat. I can't be successful if y'all guys don't come back and be a part of this because they need to see, these young guys need to see what legacy looks like.
Right.
So we need to be around, fam. Anytime you get a chance to come around the program, meet Coach Elliott. If you haven't met Carla Williams, our AD, she's outstanding and she a real one as well. So, bro, we need you in the mix. Real talk.
Do, man. I got to do better with that. I haven't been able to get down and see Coach Elliott. I haven't been able to get down in a few years because I've been in coaching. But now that I'm in the transition, I'm definitely planning on getting down. I'm going to bring my boy down because I want to
get down.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Absolutely, fam. Future Wahoo, baby.
For sure. All that. You don't got a choice.
Yes, sir. There it is. Well, fans, this has been another episode of The Lockdown featuring T-Cov and the Ball Hawk with special guest, former Cavalier great running back, Wally Lundy. Until the next time, we are out.
Wally Sultan, go get that music, man. Go get
handle that music. That for
this
sure.
This is me. This is me. Latest album. Go get that.